Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Saturday afternoon, 720 WGN, and I'm honored to be joined today. We're filling in, by the way, I'm John Hansen, filling in for Scott Catoon here on the Startup Showcase, and joined by Howard Tolman. Howard, thanks so much for stopping on by today.
I'm happy to be here.
We had a great conversation before we got on the air, and we have a lot to talk about with Chicago business and all sorts of things. And you were raised in Chicago after the age of 12, and you went to Northwestern, so you're a Chicago guy through and through.
Sure.
But born in St. Louis, and not to call you out, Howard, but since I'm a diehard Cubs fan, it's interesting to be sharing the table with a lifelong Cardinals fan.
But I've come over, I'm inclined to back winners, so I mean,
the Cardinals for a long, long time, and then recently more Cubs.
Yeah.
So, Howard, you obviously did a lot of, led 1871, CEO, your bio is very extensive, serial entrepreneur, and I thought that we could have this conversation today just about the state of Chicago and business, and we got a lot of different avenues to go through, but let's talk about a recent trip that you had overseas, which I think really illuminates a lot about our city's current state of business and where we are moving forward. So why don't you talk a little bit about where you went and what you did?
So I joined the mayor and a delegation of business people and some aldermen and some attorneys and accountants and different, groups, and then a few entrepreneurs to spend a couple of days in China and a couple of days in Japan. In China, we literally were in flight when President Trump rolled up the latest $200 million in tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't sure what our reception would be.
Right.
But it was good when we got there, and we were trying to focus in China about this factory that we want to continue to see happen, which is going to build CTA cars. One of the things that came out is that it's not enough just to build cars for the CTA. We really need to get another contract, which is pending, for Metra.
Okay.
And then they'll have critical mass. They'll have enough to know that they can keep going. They're not happy about the fact that a significant portion of their cost is going to be bumped up really significantly by these new tariffs. But they said, they've known Rahm. Actually, the guy we met with, the principal conversation was with the Minister of Commerce. And what he said was, if there's a trade war, they're not afraid of one. They don't want to have one. They feel like they have a lot of levers. You know, one of the interesting things they observed was this imbalance between taxable goods is only one of the issues. They happen to send 300,000 students to our universities each year,
mm-hmm,
who pay retail. And if they cut that back, you'll hear loud screaming from any number of universities all across the country. So they have some opportunities.
There's some leverage.
Yeah. But the other thing that was really interesting was the respect they afforded to Rahm. They invited him as the only mayor to attend a fair that they're having for countries in November. And they had known him from the White House. They had known him from prior visits to Chicago. So you get a sense that this is why Chicago is a global city. And
right,
this is how important it is to be able to have those conversations and also to have them below the national level.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask, is how unique that is. Because, mayors go on entourages and local politicians,
sure,
or congressional representatives go and they go to different places. A lot of times it's shaking hands, taking photos, sister cities, relationships, stuff like that. But to have a mayor, whether you agree with some of his local policies or not, that is this global force that can go and talk to these leaders, be firm with them, or make deals with them.
Yeah.
How valuable do you think that is to our city?
It was unbelievably valuable. And it was clear also that some of the people running for mayor, or who've declared their candidacy, mm-hmm, it would be a joke. I mean, it would be a joke because he has a level of gravitas and credibility. And he does speak right to him. I mean, this was not a promotional thing. We renewed a 5-year agreement with not simply Beijing, but with eight other cities in China. Very significant. In Japan, we renewed a sort of more of a sister city agreement. But in Japan, we had a different opportunity, which was to bring one of the leading companies in 3D metal printing to get them to move their corporate headquarters to not just Chicago, but to the IIT campus, mm-hmm. where I'm now, you know, building out the Kaplan Institute. And they have 12,000 global employees. Again, they could go anywhere. They not only picked Chicago and IIT, but they're committed to put equipment there, to do training there, to hire new engineers, have a full-time recruiter. So all of this was, again, a commentary on Chicago looks pretty good. You know, mm-hmm. This is the sixth year that we have led the country in corporate relocations. And that's an amazing statistic. So, you know, the state has issues. The city is a little healthier from a financial standpoint these days, entirely due to Rahm, I think, biting the bullet. But we still have issues. There's no question.
Right. And that's what I wanted to ask about is there is a lot of positive things. And we read in our local, in the Tribune, Block Club Chicago, about new businesses coming, Facebook opening up a lot of offices here in downtown
Chicago.
And there'll
be another big announcement within a week or two. It'll be another couple of thousand employees.
From where? Can you give us a tease or no?
I can give you an abbreviation, Salesforce.
Well, that's great news. Yeah. But you mentioned those other issues, and we talked before about, you know, crime and education. Do those stories, of course, and they're important things in the city, do those trickle down to other countries, other cities? Are they aware of that?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think that, you know, it's not like they think Al Capone is still here.
Right.
But, I mean, they're concerned to a much larger degree with a new workforce, which is much more oriented to these kinds of issues. And, you know, lifestyle, cost of living, crime, security, the schools, all of these things enter into it. But the biggest thing, I think, honestly, for somebody like Amazon or Apple or the Google or Salesforce is, you know, within a mile of where we're sitting, there's 60,000 students, and the population and the pool of talent is probably unparalleled. You know, Chicago has more universities than any city except Boston. And so that's what they really are looking for. That's the edge that they need.
Since you've been along on, you know, a pitch that has been made about Chicago, or you're part of those pitches, I wonder if you could, like, kind of peel back the layers to see what that actually is like. I mean, is it a back and forth of conversation? Is it like a PowerPoint presentation on the wall? Does the mayor skirt over the violence issue, or does he recognize? I mean, how does that actually look in the room?
So it depends on the country. Mm-hmm. You know, in France and in some of the Arab countries, there was a huge disparity. In France, it was right out front. In the Arab countries, it was clearly entirely scripted, and there was no mention of anything mm-hmm. that would offend anyone. Same in Japan.
Really?
Same in Japan. In Japan,
you mean like
they never
the
say no? Yeah, okay. None of that comes up. None of that comes up. In China, it was half and half. Half was World Business Chicago with a PowerPoint presenting sort of our case numerically. But Rahm's conversation, even to that group, which was a group of all these leaders from all these cities, was pretty straightforward. The nuts and bolts discussions on trade are pretty specific. And then these sort of social issues, you know, didn't really come up. I mean, it's not structured in a way that you would do that. And we haven't had an instance where there have been, like, demonstrations or anything like that.
Right, right. Okay, Howard, we got to take a quick commercial break, but you mentioned Amazon, and I want to talk about that in the next segment, because that's something that has everyone on pins and needles. Quick break here. John Hansen and Howard Tolman filling in for Scott Catoon on the I almost forgot the name of the show, the Startup Showcase. I always want to say Showcase Startup, but it's the Startup Showcase here on 720 WGN. Yeah. 720 WGN, John Hansard, Howard Tolman here in on the Showcase Startup here on 720 WGN. And Howard, I know you're a rock and roll fan, right? What's your favorite go-to band?
You know, I'm a Bruce guy.
Yeah.
I'm a Bruce guy. Bruce Stallone or Bruce with the E Street Band.
Yeah. Did you ever roadie many times around? Traveling around?
Many times.
Okay, so I want to talk about Amazon, because everyone's on pins and needles. The second headquarters, guaranteed of 50,000 jobs, is a very attractive thing, and they narrowed down the list, I think, about 20 different places they're looking at. How serious do you think Chicago's bid is? if you were an odds, if you were a betting man, I don't know, are you a betting man?
No, but our bid is serious. I mean, whether we're in the top couple of cities for contention is a different issue.
Right.
I mean, they haven't said anything in a long while now.
Yeah.
And they're not even saying whether they're going to cut down the list to a few finalists.
Right.
They're not saying when. They have said before the end of the year. And I think we expected it or to hear something further over the summer. I don't think we're going to hear anything. So I think it's going to be a surprise. And I think on the merits, it should be Chicago. I think we win on all the metrics. But on the politics and specifically on Amazon, facing sort of an existential risk. If you ask, what could screw up Amazon, on its way to being $1 trillion, which could have happened this week. I mean, it was pretty close because their stock went up 40 or 50 points again. But it's that they could be regulated or broken up, much like Microsoft was a long time ago. And I think that the best protection against that is to sort of locate where he's already owns the Washington Post, already has a $24 million home. So I expect it'll be in the in the Washington, Baltimore, Maryland sort of area, maybe Virginia.
You don't think that makes a difference where he already owns a home? I mean, he could build a home here, right?
But the other joke was, is it really the second headquarters or is it a hub for logistics? If it was better positioned as a hub for logistics, our chances would be even better.
Right.
I don't think you have four headquarters, I guess, is the real issue. So if he's spending a lot of time in Seattle, if he's spending a lot of time in New York and in Washington already, I don't know. I think that it would be great. There's a lot of tech companies here that don't think it would be great because they don't care to compete
mm-hmm.
for all the talent. But it would be great for the city.
Yeah. What does that mean to a city? To 50,000 jobs.
Well, it's not just 50. It's actually 50 would be their workforce, but the multiplier of the jobs that drives. I think we think it's about 120,000 jobs altogether.
So I guess what I'm saying is in media circles and people that talk through this think that if whichever city, if it's Chicago or somewhere else, lands something like that, I mean, it's a real game changer. Do you feel like
yeah.
it is?
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge thing?
Yeah.
I mean, but is it on the scale of, we see there's a lot of people for it, people that own property already that want to see that their values continue to increase. More jobs is a good thing. There's people on the other side that say, look, this is the beginning of maybe a Silicon Valley effect where you end up with people rent going way too high.
Well, look, it's pushing people out. That's what happened to Seattle for sure.
Right.
I mean, they have about 80% of the office space in Seattle, and the city has been transformed and not in a good way.
So, do you want Amazon to come here?
Well, I think we're different in a pretty amazing way, and this is actually another of the reasons that it ought to be probably here as opposed to New York or Washington. When you drive around the city, nobody has any idea of these huge plots of land that we have that are just vacant and they're 10 minutes away from the city.
Right.
I mean, if you look at where Related is, which is just south of Roosevelt Road, if you look at the Michael Reese property, which is 100 acres, you look at Finkel.
Yep. The steel plant.
Yeah. I mean,
Island,
these are, there's probably 10 of these locations where they could be absorbed and not have, I mean, the economic impact aside, just the wear and tear of figuring out where do you put one of these facilities. Chicago is a big geographic space, and I have to say that, if you're going to build an organization that's going to travel all over the world, O'Hare is an enormous, enormous benefit.
Right. So if it does come here, let's say.
And we'll have the train to the plane.
We're going to talk about that tunnel to O'Hare, and I think you and I have different opinions on that. But so the people that say that this would become another Seattle or San Francisco, then are those fears legitimate? Do you think that is enough of a mover and shaker to change the landscape of housing in this city, affordable housing, and just renting opportunities for people?
The mayor said not so long ago that he thought that the city or the state bird ought to be the crane. I mean, if you look around the city, I mean, we have an enormous capability to absorb, tens of thousands of new residents and things like that. So I think that, the income levels of these employees, this was another sort of mistake that they made to say that these were a bunch of $100,000 jobs or that the average, I mean, it's a complete spectrum. And so there'll be jobs at every economic level if they come and if they start to do this. So I think there'll be some impact. I think that tech wages will rise. There's no question about that, because we already compete with both coasts to attract certain kind of talent, and the numbers on both coasts are ridiculous compared to what Chicago pays for talent. The difference is the talent in Chicago sticks around.
Mm-hmm.
They're loyal, as opposed to having one foot out the door every time there's a better offer coming.
Right. It's interesting to see, and you mentioned the not 50,000 but 120,000. I imagine that that's a lot of those jobs that are a little bit more lower income paying, is those sort of jobs. Obviously, when people move to a city, they need services.
Yeah.
They need goods, they need services.
Absolutely.
And that's going to be something that is hopefully provided. And obviously, the benefit to the city would be the extra, you know, extra extra tax dollars.
Well, it's
coming.
A tax base. It's an income base. It's all of the above.
Right. Yeah. But your bet's on Washington.
My bet is that, as I said, on the merits, we should get it. But I think politically, it'll probably be there or New York, but probably there.
All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break before the news. You're listening to John Hansen here and Howard Dolman here on the Showcase Startup in for Scott Catoon on 720 WGN. Startup Showcase, Startup Showcase. You're listening to the Startup Showcase. Howard Dolman and John Hansen here on 720 WGN. Hey, before we go to news.
Is that like
Howard,
a make good?
Yes, exactly. I think I need about 20 more if you get the name of the show wrong. In for Scott Catoon here today. Howard, you got to walk around the new studios. What do you think?
Gorgeous. The views are amazing, and the equipment is first class. It looks all new, and it has that new studio smell.
Yes, exactly.
And it's great. It's going to be exciting. And I saw, you know, you were showing me some of the spaces to accommodate larger groups, which is pretty important, too.
Yeah, I really think it's going to be a great gathering places, performance spaces, and everything like that. It's been really fun to move in. Okay, we're going to do the news really quickly, and then we're going to talk about the Tunnel to O'Hare, the thing that's – how fast is that thing going to go? Do you know? Remember how
– Yeah, it's going to go about 100 miles. An hour.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't believe it. I don't think it's ever going to happen. We'll talk about it after
this.
First, we got the news right now. It is 1:30, and the news is sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. We go to the newsroom, and here's Bob Kessler. WGN. Startup Showcase here on 720 WGN. Myself and Howard Tolman in for Scott Catoon here today. Are you a fan of Chicago, not the city, but the band?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I was really sort of connected to them through their manager for many, many years.
Really?
Peter, who was a big Notre Damer and also built the hot dog stand that was under the L station on Fullerton called Demon Dogs.
Yeah, for sure.
So, he was an amazing character. So we used to go to Chicago shows.
Yeah. So Saturday afternoon here, got a gorgeous day. Couldn't ask for any better weather. A lot of people will be traveling to Chicago in the summer. There's no better place to be in the summer. And a lot of those people that are landing at O'Hare, you know, the Ubers or the cabs, those are $40-$50 to get to downtown. So they spend $275. They take the Blue Line. It can be a harrowing ride sometimes.
It's getting better, though.
Yeah.
The Blue Line is getting better, faster. They're redoing the tracks. They're redoing the cars.
I have no problem. I think it's great. I think it's a great way to get downtown. 45 minutes, maybe an hour if you get some stops along the way. So why do we need a tunnel between O'Hare and downtown that goes 100 miles an hour? Is that's going to cost about the same as a cab, maybe a little? I mean,
No. It'll be about $20.
Okay, so
$20.
Yeah, do you think that this is something that the city
needs? I think businesses will treat their out-of-town visitors to that ride.
As a thing, okay.
Look, when you sit in the city and you have a business meeting with out-of-town people, you might as well forget it after about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really?
And you might as well not get it started until about 10 o'clock in the morning because of transportation. I mean, they're looking over their shoulder. They're wondering when they have to catch a cab. They're worried that they're going to miss their flight. This is a different world. And by the way, it's not going to cost us anything. I mean, he's paying for it.
Right.
And he's always been right about...
Talking about Elon Musk, by the way.
Yeah, he's always been right on what he's going to do. He just misses the calendar. Okay, so, I mean, you know, when you see these, you know, the boosters landing on these little pads in the middle of the ocean simultaneously, this guy is impressive. And so whether it's the ships or the Tesla, you know, these are, by the way, I mean, there's nothing magical about what he's talking about building. These are basically Tesla, you know, SUV bodies that are expanded a little bit. They're going to run on skids. That's what they call them. And they'll take about 16 people every 30 seconds.
Right.
And, you know, they're going to go down as far as they have to go down. The tunnels will be between 30 and 60 feet underground. And literally, you'll just take off from O'Hare and you'll go under the public ways mostly. And, you know, what is so interesting is this will really finally pay off the enormous investment we made in Block 37 to have a superstation right underneath there. And that's where you'll end up.
And a lot of that infrastructure is there. I mean, it's ready to go.
And by the way, these guys are tunnelers. You know, we just, the city builds tunnels all the time. We have the deep tunnels. They just built the tunnel out in one of the suburbs to take excess water, you know, and cut down on some of this storm flooding. So, you know, you go to these SpaceX guys or these Tesla guys, and they don't, you know, they don't think this stuff is ridiculous or difficult. They're just like, you know, it's a question of resources and planning, right, and we'll get it done.
I find it fascinating.
By the way, these are going to be two tubes, so there's going to be two tunnels.
Okay, actually. One going here and one going back.
Yeah, yeah.
So, well, that's good. You wouldn't want to share a tunnel going both ways. That would slow it down.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, you bring up the that people are looking at their watches when you have to go to O'Hare, and these little things that happen in business that if people don't work in this world, like for people like me, so I work in media, you know, right. I come to studios, I get to have fun, I talk about the stuff, I don't work in the business world in a sense. Those are things that a lot of people don't think about that actually make an impact. The idea of relationships and the one-on-one. I think when people think of corporations or companies, it's all people in suits with briefcases and it just autonomy happens but it's these little things.
Well, there's a lot. I'll give you a great example, which is most of the people under 30, let's say, take notes on their phone. Okay, mm-hmm. And if you're in a meeting with a bunch of grown-ups, they're like, "What is that rude idiot over there doing?"
Right.
And it's like he's taking notes. Oh no, he's checking his email. He's doing social media. But if he was sitting there scribbling on, as we used to do, on a legal pad, it'd be so diligent.
Even
look,
if you're
taking notes, right? Even if you're doodling.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, you literally in some of these meetings have to say, this is what's going to happen. And it's a complete cultural change in what were business norms and ways of progressing. So,
do you think it's a good thing to shake things up how they were?
Well, I think that, it's a good thing to change. I mean, we don't have any choice. We have to change or you can die. I mean, that would be the other choice.
Right. But, that's always an option, you know, I guess.
But, yeah. But I mean, we live in a world of accelerating change. And I think the trick is how are we going to keep up with the flow of information? That's the real issue is, I mean, you know, 80% of the people look at their phone within 15 minutes of getting up in the morning.
15 seconds,
you know,
for me.
Well, this is the truth. I don't know what the other 20% of the people are doing. They're kidding. They're kidding themselves. But the question is, if you do that, if you don't spend 2 minutes to take control of your day, then your phone drives your day. And your inbox makes your schedule and, you know, you're fighting fires right away.
Right.
So I think you have to do that. In fact, I gave a talk in Vegas and Arianna Huffington was before me. And she has a client of hers that is making these little beds. And they're for your phone. They're little charging stations.
Really?
They have a little blankie. And you take your phone and you put it to bed. And you put it to bed outside of your bedroom, by the way, which is a whole nother issue because people use their phones for their alarm clocks.
Yep.
But you get it out of there, and that buffer lets you have a little breathing room in terms of the technology driving your life.
A few weeks ago, I was hosting the business lunch, and they were talking about the
you mean the lunch business?
Yeah, the lunch business.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Talking about just different, you know, the way things are nowadays, and open office plans. No one has offices anymore. It's open communication. How there's so many great things about trying to cut down on middle managers and more direct CEO to even the intern communication.
Yeah, right.
And there's benefits to all those sorts of things. But of course, there's dangers and pitfalls along the way. And one of them was that we are just becoming that 90% of our jobs are communicating, answering emails. And we don't really get to take a step back and broadly look at things wide lens.
The test that I always use, and by the way, we're, 1871, we took a step backwards from having all open space, which was really exciting. But then you discovered people leaving the open space to go find a quiet place to get something done.
Right.
But I think to give you an idea of just how crazy our whole world is, try sitting in your office at your desk for 5 minutes with a book open, pretending that you're reading the book. I don't think anybody in America can do that. You feel guilty. I mean, this could be the most important book for your business, and you could be learning something that was going to change the world. And nobody gets to sit there. It's like trying to read the journal. I mean, nobody can read even the business publications sitting at their desk because people think that they're not working. And creating a little time to really focus in and read important articles or materials. I don't know what we're going to do. We're like the dog and the squirrel. I mean, we just jump around. In fact, we spend about 10 and a half hours engaging with media now every day. And the research from Facebook, but from a bunch of other companies as well, is that we're going more and more places and we're spending less and less time at each stop, which means we're not absorbing anything. We're just running around. It's just what you said. We're communicating all day, but we're not saying anything.
It's fascinating because you mentioned the idea of reading a journal. So I work on a morning TV show, and I come up with new segments I do every day, fun stuff on the street, blah, 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 blah. And I found that I could not come up with ideas in that office. And I love all my coworkers, and we're working on things, and we're doing great things, and meetings are important sometimes.
Yeah.
And, so I just had to eventually tell my boss, I need to go home. I need to take a walk and clear my head.
Now, I love the airplanes before Wi-Fi. But I mean,
that was
a breather. That was a zone. In fact, you know, the train used to be that way, too. You know, the train was 20, 30, 40 minutes of quiet. You could get caught up on some stuff. I think that's all gone away now.
So you mentioned that 1871's gone away from the open floor plan, which is a little bit more something that's a little bit more tangible. That's easy. You can construct offices in different ways. Do you think that we're dog and squirrel forever now, or do you think that we'll start to peel back as people learn that this is not healthy and this is not going to help? It's not going to help your personal life. It's not going to help your work-life balance. And it's not going to help a company's bottom dollar.
Well, there's a lot of literature around, you know, disconnecting from social media. Having said that, there's more information available to you to help you make better and smarter decisions than ever before, too. The issue is, how do you construct a strategy around filtering the stuff so that you focus on what's important? And how, well, you know, putting aside, how do you know it's real? But, I mean, I think that the ability to have at your disposal Google and your phone and to look up and retrieve anything. I mean, you know, you mentioned before my Wikipedia page. but the idea is that's so valuable that we have to figure out how to let that get through, because I do think that's a benefit, and not get lost in the noise and the clutter of all the social media.
On this, on the other programs that I host here on WGN, we often get a lot of texters and callers, and rightfully so, of a generation that is a little bit older than myself, and talking about millennials and the problems that they have and blah, 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 blah. A lot of it's valid. After the commercial break, I want to dive in a little bit where you think this next generation of workers are really now the largest workforce, the number of workers are, and the future of that, and plenty of other things. So that's Howard Tolman. We're going to be talking more here on the Startup Showcase on 720 WGN. Howard Tolman and John Hansen here on the Startup Showcase on 720 WGN. Howard, we were talking during the break about the Wi-Fi on planes.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating that you break down the value of it, things along those lines, to find out how much it costs, whether per hour is better, buying for flight. Is business and numbers able, are you ever able to escape that world, or is that just how your brain is wired?
I think that, you know, that's how my brain is probably wired. And I'm just a cheap, cheap guy, too.
Really? Still?
Not. Here's what I say. I say that I hate waste. So yeah. It's not fundamentally cheap, although there would be people who would debate that. but it's mostly that I like things to be efficient, and I like to have things make sense. And I also try to understand the business purpose in a lot of these different things. So, so we're looking at all these different services, where increasingly we're buying services by the drop. I mean, you know, you can buy everything now
with a few clicks of your thumbs.
Yeah. And so, you know, it that has tremendous implications on where we're going to go with some of e-commerce and mobile commerce in particular.
Well, that's a perfect transition to our next conversation, Howard. Okay. Nice job. So obviously we live in this world now where you can get everything by the finger. We mentioned, the first place I look now when I go to a different city to go stay.
I would say by the click, not by the finger.
All right. Well, some businesses still done by the
finger. The mayor is very sensitive about that.
Okay, so when I go to a new city, when I travel, the first place I look for a place to rent, or not to rent, but to stay for the night, is Airbnb.
Yeah, for sure.
I've had great experiences with that.
Sure.
that sort of is taking. I cannot think of the last time I hailed a cab, and I used to love hailing cabs. That was fine. They always know where they're going, and Uber drivers and Lyft drivers is different. But now I just always do that. How? I mean, obviously, the way capitalism works, the stuff will just kind of work itself out, and the most efficient and cheap operation, the best operation,
well, I don't know.
Will win.
I wouldn't say efficient. I would say convenient.
Okay, convenient. Okay,
this is because we're willing to trade. I mean, we trade the convenience of a knowledgeable cab driver for these idiots who drive on Lyft and Uber and tell you, you know, they have to get on the highway to come downtown, for example.
And you're like, no,
I've been
take
driving
Ashland,
here,
yes.
Right, I've been driving Ashland for like 100 years.
Yes.
So, you know, but it's convenient.
Yeah.
Right? It's convenient, you know.
So Airbnb, which has a staff of X amount of people, far less than a hotel company.
Hundreds
that has
of thousands less, yeah, of people.
Do you feel like eventually Airbnb and that sort of economy is going to take over these businesses and we're going to have tons and tons of people out of work?
Well, I think, first of all, Airbnb is within a month or two of announcing that they're actually just going to be the back door for some of the major hotel chains.
Yeah.
Because they have enormous demand. You know, if you're a manager of a hotel and it's midday and you haven't rented 20 rooms, you'll take $1 of rent
whatever
per
it
room.
Is.
It's like
yeah.
the airlines, right? So Airbnb will be announcing more of that. The big chains are trying to do some Airbnb-like things of their own. But I think that that's going to change. And I think that the people in a lot of these hotels, look, the mini bars, the you know robotic deliveries for room service, all these things compress the number of people and bodies that you need in these businesses.
Well, you talk about truck deliveries.
Truck deliveries, you know. A lot of that is going away. There's 11 million cashiers in this country. How long do you think that's going to last? I mean, we do self-serve now at the market. It's not 100% efficient, but nobody wants to talk to a cashier at a bank anymore.
Right.
I mean, you know, you want to do it on your phone or you want to do it at an ATM.
So is it a grim outlook or is it a grim outlook for certain people that aren't willing to educate themselves?
It's a risk. It's not willing to educate themselves. It's willing to be a lifelong learner and retrain and up your skills. So companies are going to have to do this. And this is really frightening because the companies don't want to make that investment.
Right.
I think the companies would rather hire somebody who comes with the package and who, by the way, might be 10 or 15 years younger than somebody who they have to retrain at these new skills. And the best companies are companies that are saying, look, you need to be retrained. If you'll commit the time, we'll provide the materials and we'll pay for the training. And they still only get about a 30 or 40% take up, you know, from their employees. There's people who say, look, you know, I'm just going to tough it out until they show me the door.
Right. Let's talk about younger workers, hiring younger workers, because, you know, my parents' generation, a lot of people and my parents themselves, got jobs in the public sector or got jobs and they stayed in those jobs for their career. They moved to the suburbs. They moved to first to Clarendon Hills, then to Downers Grove, built a house with probably 13% interest rate in the 80s and have lived there and will live there for the rest of their lives. And that's and they work for one place or one company. That is not at all the case. And like even myself, so I'm 34 now and I and even me now every not just to my current employer, but of course, every 2 or 3 years, you're looking for that new thing. You're trying to line up with companies that share your values. There's a sense of ownership that you have in your company. Do you see that that is a
well, you want to have that sense.
Right.
You know, you want to be connected to a company that's doing something that's important and that's going to make a difference and you're working with talented people.
But are we too fickle? Are younger workers too fickle in moving on if it doesn't align perfectly? Or should we just be thankful that we have a job? Or is it somewhere in the middle?
I think the statistics are pretty frightening. I mean, I think most people leave within a year these days if they don't feel there's an alignment with the culture of the company and with the values of the companies. Now, you know, that may be that we have the luxury of having such low unemployment that they can jump from job to job. And certainly in the Valley, if you're a technologist, you believe that there's 100 jobs just waiting for you. And you know, you jump out every time somebody offers you $5 more, you know, a new package of options. But I think that it's going to slow down. I mean, I think people are going to say the wear and tear of all this job shifting and not really building a career anymore, because that's really the math. I mean, it's hard to build a career if every 2 years you're doing something different.
Right. And I just wonder then, do companies have to kind of change? And they are changing the ways that they attract millennial workers.
For sure.
And for sure. what are the ways that they can do that to try to instill this this sense of ownership from the employer to the employee?
Well, I think that you have to explain. It's a pretty simple process. I mean, I think you have to tell people, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing it, and they have to buy into that. And some of those folks, you have to tell that it's not right for them. I mean, I think, you know, opportunity cost works both ways. Mm-hmm. And if they don't want to get with the program, and, you know, I've dealt with this every time we've done a school project, you know, you've got faculty across a whole spectrum of interest in doing things the way they've always done them and doing new things, all of this kind of stuff. And all of these institutional assumptions are going to have to change.
Yeah. Howard, before we wrap things up here on the show today, 1871 got some interesting new things going on. Tell us a little bit about what you're working on.
Well, so the new my new project is the Kaplan Institute, which is a new building we're building. It's about 68,000 square feet down at the IIT, Illinois Tech. And it's going to be a center for innovation and entrepreneurship and to train all these engineers. You know, there's 8,000 technology and computer science engineers, and the city doesn't even know they're there, honestly. And
right.
So this is all part of reintroducing that resource to a city that constantly says we need more diverse talent, explaining that you can, you know, sort of take the L or take the train 10 minutes south and you can get a hold of these people. You don't have to go to Champaign. You don't
right.
have to go all over the country. So I'm excited. This the place will open unofficially in September, late September, and the grand opening will be in October. We just, I mentioned before, we moved a big company from Japan. They'll be moving onto campus. We expect to see a lot more corporate engagement because these companies have had a difficult time engaging with universities, and the reason is because the skills within the universities are fundamentally siloed.
Right.
And this will be an interdisciplinary center where problems that come in, the next generation of problems, which take a whole bunch of different skills, will help make that process friction-free, will help make that doable for companies.
Fascinating stuff. All right, Howard, we're going to wrap it up. I know Daniel has a packed show, so we're going to check in with him next to see what's coming up on 720 WGN.